You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
Hi, my name is Tricia Rose, and I am a grateful compulsive overeater. I am actually a real compulsive overeater. Those of you that have seen the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous know that it talks about different kinds of alcoholics and that some were just heavy drinkers but could stop if they wanted to. But I'm the kind of compulsive overeater that can't stop just because I want to. And even if I did stop periodically, I couldn't stay stopped. I had sneak eating even back when I was a child. By fourth grade, I was feeling badly because I couldn't fit into some of the clothes that my friends were fitting into. I was active in extracurriculars, but I was feeling badly about myself because when I went to my senior prom, I couldn't wear an off the rack dress. At that time in the 1970s, they had gunny sacks dresses, and I didn't fit those. I had one that was handmade with elastic. I had a top weight. This is a picture when I weighed approximately 200 pounds. I don't have very many pictures from them because I felt so badly about my body that I was usually hiding behind other people. I wore a lot of black. And then I did some other crazy stuff, dieting to the point that I now recognize were bulimic and anorectic type behaviors, not throwing up per se, but exercising hard, not eating enough. And I took a picture of myself and blacked out to try to make myself look skinnier in the picture to trick myself into thinking that that's what I would look like if I could just control. And I had the illusion that I could control until one day in the 1980s, I ate so hard that my body ended up throwing up without me. And it was humiliating. And I did basically steps 1, 2, and 3 on my bathroom floor in horror that I had eaten so much that my body was throwing it up. And I thought I was going to choke to death on my vomit. I wasn't so much worried about the idea that I might die, but I was humiliated at the idea that somebody, that when they came to collect my body, they would see the amount of throw up and they would see the amount of food in the throw up and just what a gluttonous, insane thing that I had done to myself and what kind of a horrible person must I be to do that. And that was humiliating. And so I prayed on my knees, God, please don't let me die in my own vomit. If you let me live, I promise I'll get help, which was sort of a coming to believe and a willingness to turn my life over. I did go to my therapist. I told my therapist the truth about how I had been eating and the effect that it was having on me, and that I had eaten so hard that my body threw it up. And she, thank God, was aware of addiction, was aware of food addiction, and was aware of the program of Overeaters Anonymous. And she sent me here, and I didn't want to come. I had never heard of Overeaters Anonymous, but I'd seen some movies or TV shows that had like Alcoholics Anonymous, and I saw people in a room and somebody standing up and saying, I'm so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic, and saying things out loud in front of other people. And that was not for me, thank you very much. I could pay my counseling fee, talk one-on-one privately with the counselor, and we would get this fixed. And once I was well and wonderful, then I would be slender and I'd go back out and the world would be wonderful, don't you know? And thank God she did send me to OA, and I believed her in her competence, that she knew what she was talking about. I believed that she really cared about me, and that if she thought this was the place to be, that surely it must have something. What she told me was that I couldn't buy from her or any other counselor the miracle that could happen in these rooms. And I was at least willing to consider that possibility enough that I showed up and I got a sponsor and I worked the first 9 steps, and then I worked 10, 11, and 12. And I got abstinence. I had a weighed and measured abstinence, and I was working 10, 11, and 12, and I got to have many years, in fact, some decades of back-to-back abstinence at a healthy weight. And then, unfortunately, I quit working the program when I had a catastrophic cognitive impairment. I was on a megadose of an antidepressant, and it caused some mental dysfunctioning. And then I had a stroke, and I lost the ability. I couldn't drive. I was getting lost in my own neighborhood. I couldn't put gas in my car. I couldn't remember my own zip code. I couldn't remember people's names. I was humiliated, and I didn't want people to see me like that. And I didn't have the humility to ask for help or to show up as I was and just tell the truth. And so I stopped coming to meetings, and I told all my sponsees that I couldn't sponsor anymore. And I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have sponsees. I was no longer working the program, and I was not paying any attention to what I weighed or what I ate. And I not only wasn't standing on my own scales, I was so profoundly depressed, I was blowing off doctor's appointments. So until I had another health condition that sent me back to the doctor's office, I was in massive denial about the fact that I was gaining weight, which should not have been a surprise. It should have been a blinding flash of the obvious, because this is a fatal and a progressive disease. At least if you're a compulsive eater of the variety that I am, it is a fatal and progressive disease. So left to my own devices, without surrendering my life to a higher power, consciously doing that and consciously doing the actions each day which keep me in fit spiritual condition, I succumbed to the disease. And I ate my way back up to from the 130s to over 175 pounds. And the doctor said to me that I was in, that my blood pressure was high, my blood sugar was high, my triglycerides were high, my cholesterol was high. He wanted to put me on blood thinners. He wanted to put me on statins. He wanted, and he said that I was at risk of having another stroke, and I would rather die than have another stroke. I have regained some of my cognitive functioning, but it is so frustrating not to have my cognitive functioning, and I do not want to be a vegetable. So the other thing he said that I could do, but he said, and a lot of people find it difficult. He said there was an eating protocol that could reverse the effects and bring my cholesterol under control, because what I said to him was, gee, my dad's on statins and he's still obese and he has side effects. The statin doesn't cure the underlying problem. And my mom's on blood thinners, and we've almost lost her a couple times to internal bleeding. I really would prefer not to do that. And he said, well, there is this protocol, but a lot of people find it very difficult to stay on. And I said, try me. Because in my hip pocket, I had the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And I knew that if I came back here, that a God beyond my understanding, but accessible to me through the 12 steps and through my participation, my sincere participation in this fellowship, would allow me to eat as the doctor had suggested. So I do have essentially a whole food plant-based diet. I no longer eat for entertainment. I eat for my health. I eat all of the calorie dense things. I do weigh and measure, and I eat specifically the things that I was told to eat. How am I able to do that day after day? I am able to do that day after day because I thoroughly worked steps 1 through 9 to clear up the wreckage of my past and the stuff that built up during my relapse. And I now am working 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. And because of the miracles that are happening in my life today, I wanted to share with you a little bit about how I do that. Step 10, it says, continue to take personal inventory, and when, doesn't say if, it says when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I appreciate that. I often look for where I'm dishonest and selfish and self-seeking and afraid. And I also have some other ways of taking inventory that I have found very helpful. One of them I borrowed, in that it suggests in step 12 that having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. What are these principles? Well, in our trusty OA 12 and 12, it actually lists a principle with each step. And lo and behold, the first principle for the first step is honesty. And that principle, when I came back, I did a sort of an inventory to look at what did I not do in relapse that I did when I was abstaining. And one of the things that I did when I was abstaining was practice the principle of honesty. I was honest about what I was eating. I was honest about how much I was eating. And I was honest about what I weighed. And all of those things went out the window during the relapse. So some people say that they're afraid of the scales, and I'm not here to judge anybody else's program. But for me, part of my practicing honesty is my being willing to be honest about how much I'm putting into my body and also the results that that's getting. I'm now postmenopausal, and I don't have as much muscle mass as I did when I was in my 20s and 30s. And unless I miraculously build that back up, I don't get to eat as much. So taking an inventory, I sometimes, if I'm having a problem in a particular area, a couple of things that I've found, if it's an area that's recurring and it seems to be an issue in my life, sometimes my sponsor says, hey, why don't you work a mini 12 on that? And I'll take just that specific issue and look at, Okay, I'm powerless over this because it keeps showing up. Do I have faith that the 12 steps can help me? Do I have faith that, yes, I do? Okay, I'm going to ask God to help me, and I'm going to use this inventory process. And one of the things that I have inventoried when I'm having trouble doing something, my behavior's not lining up in a way that I believe God would have me, is go down and inventory the principles as listed and look and see which ones are out of alignment. And there's usually at least one or two that jump out at me like, well, definitely not practicing faith here because I didn't even take this to God, or not practicing very much courage because I'm here hiding out, not doing it. Those are a couple of the ones that bite me in the butt. And I need to move on now. So step 10 on a daily basis, I also do steps 11 and 12 on a daily basis. I have what I call my morning rituals, and my sponsor or somebody else pointed out to me that the word ritual is inside the word spiritual. And so that's why I call it my morning rituals, not just my morning routines. But every morning when I get up, I pray. Every morning I read from my For Today. I read from my Voices of Recovery. I typically will jot myself some notes about their meaning. I typically write at least 5 gratitudes and some thought for the day. One of the challenging things that's in the Region 1 and the Region 4 OA journals is write down something that you like about yourself. I'm not religious about doing that one, but periodically I do it. And I found when I first saw that in the journal, it was much harder for me to come up with one thing that I liked about myself. I'd have this whole page of gratitudes, but then it was hard for me to say one thing that I liked about myself. And that is becoming easier for me to do now. I'm also the cutting edge of my recovery now is that I am now becoming more willing to pause during the day to do either a spot check inventory or to pause and connect and see what higher power would have me do. What is my next right step? And what do I need? Do I need to rest? Do I need to say something, or do I need to be quiet? So becoming willing to pause is, it's still not my default, but it's an area where God is helping me to grow. And then step 12, every day I reach out to other people. Every day I have sponsees that call me. They have morning times so that they and I can have that connection first thing in the morning. And it helps. I look forward to those calls. I learn so much from my sponsees. They ask questions, which if I am working on how can I lovingly support them with whatever the challenge is, then I usually have to go deeper into my own program. It is one of the most joyful things in my life. Also, when people ask me to share at a meeting like tonight, I always try to say yes. And if I can't say yes for that meeting, I'll say, well, I'm not able to on that night, but I could come on another night. I try to always say yes. I try to put my phone number up so that other people can have it. And I also welcome anyone. If you've heard something here, if you're new, if you're returning, if you're struggling in any area, or if you just want to check in, please take my phone number. I love doing OA calls and texts, and I'd be delighted to talk to you about what's going on in your program. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be with you here tonight. And I am so grateful for the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual recovery that today I get to live in a normal sized body, and I do not have to take statins or blood thinners. And my blood pressure, my blood sugar, my cholesterols, triglycerides, all those numbers are now in the happy, healthy zone. And the nurse always does like a now a little happy dance when they take my blood pressure, because my blood pressure is nice and low. And all of that is done. My medicine is my food and my food is my medicine. And that could never have been true without the miracles of this program. So thank you, God. Thank you, fellows. And I pass and mute.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Overeaters Anonymous podcast, hit the like button and subscribe to receive future episodes. If you are looking for a meeting online or in person, visit www.oamidpeninsula.org.